I see that we have the full subcommittee here, either online or in person. So with that, I'm going to call the meeting to order and let's get started. Thank you.
Madam Chair, do you want a roll call?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So we'll do Chair Vinton.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Flowers.
Here.
Senator Bogner.
Here.
And Representative Harvey.
Here.
Thank you. I walked away from my agenda, but I'm fairly certain that first up is the report from our design team.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the subcommittee. We're going to do quick introductions to make sure Allison has all of us. I have a few more folks with us today. I'm Elizabeth Lockwood with A&E Design. I'm the design lead with the firm and the team.
Good morning. I'm Crystal Herzog. I'm the historic architect with A&E Design.
Good morning. Chris Martison, principal with A&E.
Good morning. My name is Scott Osteen, project manager with A&E.
Jerry Howe, Legislative Services Division.
Carolyn Cheeta, Chief Clerk of the House.
Good morning, everyone. Randy Stevens, Planning Manager, State A&E Division, Department of Administration. Wow, can't talk today. We'll get there.
Marilyn Miller, Secretary of the Senate.
Todd Edwards, Chief Legal Counsel.
And thank you. Oh, go ahead, Joe.
Dream, Legislative Council Liaison and Deputy Director of the Legislative Fiscal Division.
Thank you. And as has been our custom in the past, I would encourage anyone in attendance to feel free to ask questions along the way. If I don't see you, I know Joe will.
Madam Chair, should we share screen and get going?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. I believe many of you also have versions of this on your desk as well. It's quite a bit to absorb. We've been working since beginning of August with this team on locating a hearing room and establishing workspaces within the Capitol. And what we've compiled today is what we're working towards is arriving at a conclusion for the location of the hearing room. And so we've begun to compile some of our history so that it's really easy for everyone to see where we've kind of come from and where we've been working towards going. We'll go through these series of slides as an update, and then we'll get into a deeper conversation as we get into the new information for today. Our agenda for today is this is the third work session with the subcommittee, and we've been looking at locating a hearing room within the first floor of the Capitol. We've come to a conclusion, or excuse me, not a conclusion, but we've been studying 11 different locations and been distilling those down to two pod locations, which we'll show you those locations in a moment. At the last work session two, we discussed getting a little bit deeper into the ROM costs, looking more at what the differences might be between the two pod options from a cost standpoint, as well as construction impacts. So we'll give an update today on that. And our goal and what we're working towards is assessing and distilling these concepts to arrive at a study conclusion and recommendation to Legislative Council by the end of the month. We have been looking in the past at what kind of is coming on the side of this slide. We do have one more potential date identified with the work session subcommittee if we feel it's necessary. I didn't locate it on here today because I think we should discuss whether or not it's necessary. But the bigger goal being working towards the Legislative Council, and if that's on the 29th or when that is scheduled, coming to kind of firming that date up would be great. a timeline of what we've been taking into account. The Capitol has a lot of different moving parts and pieces, and we've been looking at previous records of long-range planning, the ROSE assessment, the master plan, the House bill, and really where our work has started in August was leaning heavily on the midterm plan that was approved, that's D1D, and we'll look at that again today, to identify a hearing room location within the first floor of the Capitol. We've been keeping in mind the long-range plan, but our directive is to be working towards solving the midterm plan. Some of the process definition, so that it's, you know, we're all in the same space here, is guiding principles. Those were formed with the subcommittee and have been in pursuit of the midterm plan. They stemmed off of the master plan and the long range plan, and we'll look at those in a second. The project priorities are contracted areas of focus for our design team. These priorities are achievable within the project scope and time frame, and keeping periphery on the long range plan. But again, we're working towards that kind of 10-year midterm plan, and we'll talk about that more in a second. The project goals, those goals we established with the subcommittee, and we've been using those to rank and assess each of our concepts to arrive at a conclusion of which hearing room locations might have a higher priority. We've been working through the process of a series of studies, and we'll go into detail on kind of where we came from today in those. Those studies have been using the project goals and guiding principles to assess and then distill, and we're working towards a conclusion this month in arriving at where we think the hearing room location is best fit for the Capitol. The execution piece of it would be the culmination of this phase, where we'd be moving forward into schematic design, design development, and construction documentation, and then going into construction with the identified hearing room location. Joe, do you have anything you want to add? Okay. The guiding principles for the midterm plan: the People's House, a destination that celebrates the Montana State Capitol. And I'll note, as I was diving into these, we've been using these, and you'll see some of these come up in a moment as we get into the assessment of some of the concepts, is which hearing room locations maybe better meet or seem more closely aligned with these guiding principles. So we'll revisit these as we get into the concepts. The second one is ensure public access to the government process, making it intuitive, safe, easy, and comfortable. Three, create spaces that foster a safe, healthy, efficient, interactive working environment for legislators, their staff, and constituents. The four, to provide orderly growth and future flexibility. And five, to provide longevity and support the legacy. The project priorities Joe is going to speak to.
Okay, the priorities for the planning on the first floor were approved by the long-range space planning work group that had met and had members of both the council, audit, and finance committees involved. And basically, the main points are that, looking at a little larger printed version than online, the priorities are, first, to provide on the first floor one additional Class 1 hearing room, approximately the size and capacity of room 102, and one additional conference or office room, approximately the size and capacity of room 101 for the legislative function. The location of the new hearing room shall consider functionality of the House Class 1 committee use, ease of public and ADA accessibility, and minimization of negative impacts to legislative staff workplaces. After providing for that hearing room and the additional legislative conference and office room, the additional legislative space on the first floor was to be allocated to the three division directors for them to basically come up with a plan on a per FTE basis on how to best fit their staff around each hearing room option so that they could be contiguous, provide the best service to the legislature, the best functionality internally, and other metrics that were important to them. So basically, after the hearing room and the additional conference office room, the rest of the space was supposed to be kind of shown is how it would fit with staff on the first floor of the Capitol. And again, this is the midterm plan that was approved by both the working group and the Legislative Council. And it is meant to be kind of a bridge plan until a longer range plan could be put into place, which the long range plan clearly articulated that that means in the long term there needs to be more space in the Capitol building for legislative functions, hearing rooms, offices, constituent spaces, etc. But that at this time, since there was no, there's too little space in the Capitol building itself, this is kind of a midterm bridge plan that would be one step towards the future long-range plan, which is why we wanted to make sure this didn't impede the future development of the additional spaces within the Capitol building for legislative function. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and the subcommittee, is there any questions?
I'm just going to mention quickly that with the sharing your document, my screen is very small, so I can't really see if anyone in the room has any questions. So, Joe, I'll just rely upon you to acknowledge that.
Okay, Madam Chair, I see no questions in the room here.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's go forward.
All right. So what we've done is divided these project priorities that were determined in that midterm D1D plan. Our top priority has been locating the House hearing room and conference room on the first floor of the Capitol. And then we've been working with the G3 directors to further assess and evaluate each of those hearing room concepts to look at how we could divide up per their FTE allocation to look at the best contiguous space. And at our last subcommittee meeting, many of us heard from that team on which, you know, ones worked best for their teams. So we've been taking that information into account. Our project goals, as a reminder, these project goals we use to assess and rank each of the studies. The first one was accessible and safe, optimal adjacency within capital and workspaces, workplace modernization concepts was our third one, right sizing, looking at how staff, legislators, public work within the ROSE recommendations, looking at future flexibility and how we could support the long-term plan, doing cost management and schedule impact, and then preserving the capital's historic integrity. A little moment in time, this is a look back at that initial project goal, and that priority being the goal of this study is to identify viable locations of the Capitol first floor for new Class 1 House hearing room, approximately the same capacity as hearing room 102, and that was the directive from D1D. And that initial study, before going into our first subcommittee work session, was we had 11 identified locations that were in the east, west wing, and then as well three pod locations. And we've been studying using those goals that we just went over to assess and distill those down. At our first work session in August, the outcome of that subcommittee distilled those 11 studies down to 5 for further investigation, looking into one in each wing and three pod locations. From there, in September, our second work session, we distilled those studies down further into 2 pod locations, and we'll review why those other ones came off the table today as just a point of reference for everyone. And the directive was to look at the 2 pod locations, 3, A, and C, which we'll show you in a plan in a moment. Today's work session 3 is to review the differentials between 3A and 3C, and in particular, it was asked of us to get a little bit more fine grain on cost, construction schedule, and adjacencies to look at what are the really, what is standing out between these. The outcome of this is to arrive at a conclusion for the hearing room location study and make a recommendation to Legislative Council. This was a chart that we shared early on just as far as workflows that we wanted to bring back in, just so everyone's aware of these parts and pieces that we've been working on the periphery outside of what's in green have been our decision points we've been working towards with the subcommittee. Our initial decision point was to arrive at clear consensus on guiding principles, project priorities, project goals, and our project roadmap for the process that we've been going through. And from there, we separated out the hearing room location studies from the workspace studies to have some separate work sessions with staff facilitators, which is Joe and Randy, as well as working with Marilyn and Carolyn on House and Senate to achieve looking at basement, third, fourth floor locations, and then working with the G3 group to identify that FTE allocation for space on the first floor. We brought those studies to an initial decision point, which was saying those 11 studies, looking at how we could pare those down using that assessment matrix. And then we've continued that into decision point 3, which is taking into account the workspace allocation and how that might impact the hearing room locations. We're currently sitting at this point in here where it feels like we're getting close to arriving at a recommendation. If that's the subcommittee's decision and direction today, we'll present and work through what we've assessed and distilled today, and then hopefully we can start to work towards taking things to legislative council. The hearing room utilization, Joe, do you want to touch on these quickly?
Yes, Madam Chair. Now, this kind of talks about what we currently have, which is 5 rooms that have been used for House Class 1 committees, and with 6 committees, that means one has to meet in the afternoon, and that's kind of shown on the top graphic here that shows the number of individual legislators, staff, and total number of individuals in each of these rooms and what time they meet. And you can see that Human Services has been meeting in the afternoon, so one of the objectives was to get all 6 of them being able to meet at the same time by creating an additional hearing room. And basically, one thing that happens when you do that is now you have, instead of 100 legislators divided by 5, you now have 100 divided by 6 committees, since they're all meeting at the same time. So one thing we wanted to point out is the numbers we see in the committees from last session that vary from 23 down to 18 will all reduce, or potentially, if one of them stays the same, the others will reduce even more to an average of below 17 per committee. And that's important when we start looking at the size of the hearing rooms, and was one reason I think that the subcommittee, for multiple reasons, opened up the door to considering the pods, even though they're slightly smaller in size than room 102 is itself. There's a lot of attributes related to them, including heightened public access and meeting more of the guiding principles that really came to our attention as we have evaluated them in more detail. So again, just wanted to go over the committees that exist, what the goal was to get the 6th committee, and then how that also affects the numbers. So when we look at the hearing rooms, we have the potential of 4 very large hearing rooms on the first floor, 1 small on the fourth floor, and we're creating one additional one that's in between the 2 on the first floor, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe.
This is a transition slide for us just to come up for air before we dive into our hearing room location studies. We'll do a quick point of reference on the first floor capital overview and our assessment on historic character and what the different wings provide. We'll look at the first floor capital assessment and some new slides today that we've updated the first floor capital assessment slide with some additional information that we've found, as well as go through where we arrived and distilled to 2 pods from our last work session, just so it's very clear why we pulled the 2 wings off the table and why the directive was to go into those pods. And then we'll look at hearing room options for 3A and 3C, which are the pods, and our additional studies that we looked at, as well as come to a summary. And the summary will be a nice spot for us as a group to pause and I think have a really good dialogue and conversation. Again, as Madam Chair mentioned, please ask questions as we go through these as well. Crystal.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All right, this is a slide we've seen a few times, but it's just a reminder of as we move throughout the first floor, what the character of those spaces look like. The pods are located in the oldest part of the Capitol. That character is 1901 era, and then the east and west wings are each built or originally constructed around 1911. So you can see on the east wing there, on the right, it's a little bit more modern in finishes, and then finishes in the west wing with the photos on the left there, we have a bit more historic character with decorative plaster and gilded paint. This is also a slide we've seen before. It really just kind of walks us through the general conditions in the east wing, the west wing, and the central area, which we're referring to as the pods. New information on this slide is shown in kind of an orange or golden color. And really, those notes are to say in the west wing, if there's structural construction, which would be removal of columns and things like that, it will impact the occupancy of the Secretary of State's office, which is immediately above the first floor of the west wing. And in the east wing, similarly, if there's construction to remove columns and that sort of thing for structural upgrades, it will impact the governor's wing. So just keeping that in mind as we move forward. Thank you. All right, so in our previous meetings, we eliminated four of the studies that we had distilled down from the original 11. We referred to them as 1A, 1A alternate, 2A, and 3B. The reasons that we decided not to move forward, well, I guess the subcommittee decided not to move forward with these particular options, were primarily due to scoring and costs. When we look at the 1A and 1A alt, you can see they're listed here. There's conflicts with the guiding principle 2, which was to ensure public access to government process. We really want to make sure that government process is intuitive and then the public and staff have a safe and easy, comfortable access throughout the building. There's challenges for ingress and egress for legislators to the bullpen and for staff. All of these options generally result in a less contiguous space for legislative staff within the legislative divisions. The options in 1A and 1A alt divide the open, flexible nature of the wings, and there are more significant costs associated with structural mechanical upgrades and space configurations if the hearing room is placed in a wing. And then obviously what we talked about on the previous slide with vacancy necessary for either Secretary of Staff space or the governor's wing above in some of those wings. And then on the west side, there would be some significant loss of historic character if we were to put the hearing room over there, depending on the configuration of those spaces and that arrangement of offices around it. The reasons that we discussed not moving forward with pod 3B, which if you recall is in the northwest corner, was to prioritize that space for staff offices. That is one of the pods that has the most windows, and so having daylight for staff is advantageous. And if that space were to have a column removed as necessary for a hearing room, the structural upgrades would impact the use and ability to occupy the bill storage and printing services immediately below during that construction period in the basement. Are there any questions about any of the options that were most recently moved off the table?
We wanted to make sure the subcommittee had a chance to review these and comment on them. If there's any that we have highlighted that you don't agree with, we're happy to revise this slide. I think these are all slides that we're working towards preparing for legislative council, so we want to make sure that we've reflected your thoughts in what we've written here.
Madam Chair, I see no comments or questions in the room here, unless there's some online.
I am not seeing any online on my screen, and the this kind of overview accurately reflects our discussion from the last meeting, so thank you.
I do want to note, while we're still on this slide, the fact that it says reasons not to move forward and then says pods 1A, 1A alt, 2A. It's not actually the pods. It's just 1A, 1A alt, and 2A. So that's a revision we can make on our end to make sure that this is really clear as we memorialize this meeting moving forward.
Great. Thank you.
All right, so at the previous subcommittee meeting, direction was given to move forward with the pod options 3A and 3C, which you can see small images of in the upper left hand. So 3A is in the southwest corner of the 1901 era of the building, and pod 3C is in the northeast corner of the 1901 era of the Capitol building. Direction was given to move forward with these particular options primarily because of cost and public access. However, there are some other nuanced reasons to keep these on the table, and they are that both pods meet Guiding Principle 2, which is ensuring that public access is safe and easy. It makes public wayfinding access and access simple. It's also very near the other hearing rooms, so that is advantageous from a noise standpoint, from a wayfinding standpoint, as well as a public access standpoint. Having a hearing room in the pod creates contiguous space available for use for legislative staff within the divisions, and it allows for more delineated separation of public corridor noise and foot traffic from the legislative staff and office workspaces. And it maintains the wings as a more contiguous space for future use or needs as the building carries forward for another 100 or 200 years. And it meets Guiding Principle 4, providing for orderly growth and future flexibility of the Capitol space as a whole. So are there any questions or comments on reasons for moving forward with the pod 3A and 3C locations?
Seeing none in the room here, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you. Let's continue.
So this is the transition slide to give us a moment to pause. We're going to go in now to updated information as we studied this last week and a half between our subcommittee meetings, the differentials between 3A and 3C in more detail. We've continued to develop furniture concepts, work on space allocation for the three divisions, updated building systems analysis with our consultants in structural and mechanical. We've looked at hearing room pod schedule and what that might look like for construction, as well as hearing room study summary, and that'll give us a nice moment to pause and discuss. We've continued to refine these furniture concepts. As a reminder, these are very, very, very conceptual. They're nowhere near construction documentation. They're to provide a point of reference and a proof of concept. Can we get a variety of furniture configurations to work within one of the hearing room locations? Both pods, 3A and 3C, are very similar in configuration and conditions. There would need to be two ingress-egress doors. We're prioritizing one for public entry, one for staff entry, but both in the case of emergency could be used for egress. In this scenario, the location was pulled from 3A, so windows would be on this southern portion. If we were to mirror this, that would be 3C, where windows would be on the northern portion, if we were to mirror it, as well as some windows on the side as well. The configurations we've looked at is a handful of scenarios to say how could we provide the most flexibility to have a kind of variety of different scenarios of if a committee is larger or smaller, what might that look like, and how can we configure the public seats in order to flex with that. In this scenario, the horseshoe configuration, there would be an area that would be more fixed, and then we would have tables that would butt onto the side of that that then could be removed, as you can see in these scenarios. As we go down in our legislator need counts, we're able to increase our public seat count to find a balance of a range of 48 or 49 total occupants to 61 total occupants, and that would be what would be available in the space. Our max occupancy for this is ranging about 62 to 64 people. Per fire code, we'd need to work with the fire marshal additionally to determine what they would like to see that number at, but per our current calculations, per the International Building Code, is we're sitting about 62 to 64 people max occupancy, which in this scenario, you could see we're almost at that number, so there'd be a few more that could stand in the room that wouldn't be seated in there. In each of these configurations, we've continued to work with Carolyn and Jerry as well with the Legislative Services Division on these concepts to identify and try to create a really nice workflow scenario for the secretary to be able to have visual sight lines on the chair and the staff that sits oftentimes to the right side of the chair. In these three, we've located the secretary's seat just slightly behind so that they can see and easily have sight lines, as well as the coffee tables integrated there. And so this is something that could be reconfigurable or movable, but in the horseshoe configuration, there's a nice opportunity with that corner there to provide that location for the secretary. You can see, and there were some comments in our previous subcommittee meetings, as the podium or as the space grows with more legislator seats and trying to get as many public seats in there as possible, you can see the podium is pretty far into the center. There was note about some sightlines and concerns for that that could easily be solved with less public seats. In this scenario, if there's 19 legislators, we just wanted to show kind of the max of what we could do per ADA accessibility in there. You can see in the next two options, the podium is located a little bit more even with that final last legislator seat so that they're not so far into that horseshoe configuration. Other comments and things that we discussed in our last subcommittee meeting was the media having a location or place to plug into and then be able to stand or grab a seat if not all the public seats are being used. Joe, do you have anything else you want to add?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, besides the media, and this is really non-specific on the location, and I think the thought was that they would be not behind a legislator. They would have a good space where they could set up that would be known, would have the proper hookups, electrical, maybe even connection to the microphone system so they could kind of actually record easier. But again, a lot of details to be worked out. On the upper right-hand corner, I wanted to point out one more thing, is the existing hearing rooms, you can see the capacity of them, rooms 102, 137, 152, and 172 are the four large hearing rooms on the first floor that have the largest committees associated with them, or conceivably would be logical for the largest committees to meet in. Depending upon public access, that would perhaps modify that decision. And then you can see the fifth Class 1 House hearing room currently under use is room 455, and that has a 53-person capacity. So you can kind of compare what this room would provide on the first floor, a much more accessible location on the first floor of the Capitol, similar to or even exceeding the capacity of room 455. And that was something we wanted to point out to the subcommittee members so that they could kind of get a feel for how this would fit in, and also the flexibility that Elizabeth has just gone over with the movable portions was another factor the subcommittee did point out that was actually something they liked about the more squarish setup, but that they actually preferred the more curved for better view of each other and the public. So this kind of tries to hybrid the both of them and what you liked about both of the options for your consideration, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. I think we'll pause right here to see if there are any questions or comments from anyone in the room. Okay.
Madam Chair, not seeing
are there any questions or comments from anyone online?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe, do you happen to have or any of the design team the dimensions of room 455 just for context?
Yeah, it's there on page 19.
Compared to what the dimensions will be for one of these hearing rooms.
Senator Flowers, we can get that pretty quickly. I don't have the dimensions in particular, but I do have the square footage, if that would be.
Oh, that works.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Give me a second, and I'll just, as soon as I find that, I'll mention that.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Flowers and Joe, the square footage for, you said 455 is 773 square feet, and we're going to check on the dimensions. It just might take us a second to reach out to a team member. A pod is approximately 940 square feet.
Okay, I'll jump in with a couple of questions or comments. It appears that in the furniture concepts, all three have the media, it looks like to me, right at the end of the legislator, I'm going to call it the legislative seating area. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yep. And the thinking there, this is something we can get into down the line, was to right now have a placeholder of something that feels like it's workable, but to have an area where media could plug in that's not too far to the back that they're blocked by public seats, or on the legislator side, we heard comments previously that there was concern for the media standing behind the legislators. And the thinking here was this could be a raised wall that could have audiovisual kind of concealed within it, and that this panel could be something that could be movable and march along a grid to plug back in. And that would allow for, as the public seats grow from this, you know, 19 legislators to 11 legislators, the media wouldn't be so far back in the space. But looking for feedback or thoughts on if we understood that correctly.
Yeah, thank you for that explanation. And I guess my immediate thought is that I would much prefer that the public not have their line of sight blocked by media. And that could possibly be achieved by having media against the wall by the public entry in all three of the, yeah, I'm talking about the other wall. Nope. Yes. Either of those spots, and I'm open to discussion on why that would or wouldn't work, but again, my priority is seating and participation by public. And yes, I do realize that there will be media in there, but it's only from time to time. It's not a consistent presence. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, I do think that addresses another thing that I've thought of, is that the press typically comes in, they take a few photos, and then they want to move out of the space once they get, let's just say if there's five bills queued up, when the bill that they're interested in, I guess, taking film and audio about, then they usually just pack up and head on out. So having it closer to the door would be more conducive to them coming in, setting up, and then leaving without disturbing the public or the legislative committee itself. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. And one other question for the design team, and I think you might have touched on this, but the wall that appears at the end of all three of the legislative seating areas, is that like a pony wall? How is that anticipated?
Madam Chair, in the subcommittee, the intent was to provide some more of the definition and designation between public and legislators so that they feel there's some sort of kind of hierarchy or presence to the seating, and to have a pony wall there to provide for and the height of that, the detailing of it, is all things that we'd be working through in future phases, but to have a slight swing gate and then a low wall to provide kind of an end cap to the furniture. And then these furniture pieces in here, some of these could be movable and reconfigurable, and we could kind of slide that panel. We'd have to get into the detailing of it, but be able to slide that panel over in some of these scenarios so you'd still have that end cap to the furniture.
Thank you. And then again, just to confirm, I believe you said this earlier, in all three, do you anticipate the legislative seating to be elevated in these three diagrams?
Madam Chair, at this time, we do not anticipate within the hearing room pod configurations the ability to have elevated seating due to the amount of space you would need for a ramp for ADA accessibility. It provides a safety concern.
Oh, I see. Yeah, thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
I
have a question.
Yes, please.
In previous conversations regarding media location, there was a statement about folks not walking in front of the camera for the media. I'm assuming we will provide some sort of plug on the location that Elizabeth indicated there. So just kind of to the right of the door on that back wall, and maybe giving them some ability to project towards the arc, such that if folks come in the door at the last minute, they might be able to stand. I'm just trying to ensure that the media is getting their needs and that the public is able to also enter and exit the room. Are there any concerns with the public walking in front of the camera, or is the media there for such a short period of time that that's not a concern?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And it all depends on the committee and the bill hearing, of course. But in my experience, the media is not there very, very frequently. And they have generally been very good about their interactions with the public and being respectful of, you know, the public's ability to see during the committee hearings. So whether the media sets up in the back of the room, kind of at the end of the back row of public seating, or whether it's on that other wall, which would be, as we're looking at the diagram, yes, to the left of the opening. My preference is at the end of the row of public seating, but I mean, that can be figured out and further discussed, I think, down the road. What does anyone else think?
I'll add that when the media is filming, it's usually during testimony, and when that's happening, the public is usually seated and not moving. So I think it is fine if there's, you know, if it's behind the walkway or behind seating.
Thanks, Senator Bogner. In addition, if the meetings are being recorded, the media can always, I don't know exactly how they do it, but they can capture images from that recording, as I believe.
Madam Chair, this is Jerry Howe.
Yes.
In my experience, there are two things that happens with the media. One is a place for them to plug in to capture both the audio and the visual. That can be anywhere in the room. The way that it's done in Utah is you plug in with a wireless device that attaches to the syncs to their camera, and then the camera records both the audio and the video from the system that is available in the room. And then the other thing that the media needs is just a place to stand for photographs or for capturing their own video. And so long as they've got a place where they can stand and get a reasonable shot for their own video. In my experience, when the red light on that camera comes on, people in the audience do not want to be captured on television, so they stay clear. I've never had an experience where people are cutting in front of or interrupting that. You know, that camera, big light comes on, and people are staying away from that. But they just need to have a place where they can stand with a view. I'm agreeing with the assessment that's being made for the media with the central location to plug into audio that blocks the view of the cameras. It seems to me that you could put one or two jacks in the room somewhere on a sidewall or a back wall where they can plug in the wireless device, just so long as they have access to that. And then they could stand anywhere in the room, depending on the configuration of the room, to get their photographs and video. Just allow them the opportunity to be where they needed to be to get the view. In most cases, I think that's a better resolution than giving them a spot to stand. Just allow them free reign of the room so long as they're not interfering with the view of the people. And then the way that was handled in my previous stay was that they drafted legislative rules to allow chairman the prerogative to direct the media in the room under the circumstances, and then they put some places off limits for the media directly behind legislators, for example, and they just passed that by legislative rule, and that's how they handled the complicated situation with the media. But primarily, you want the media to be able to come, you want them to be present, you want them to get a good audio, a good video, and you want them to be able to have a reasonable shot of the room with their cameras, whether they're still pictures or video camera. No, that's it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other comments? Okay, let's proceed.
Okay. Madam Chair and the subcommittee, as an update, room 455 is a 25-foot by 34-foot. I think, Senator Flowers, you were interested in that statistic there.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Madam Chair. That helps.
Yeah, thank you. You said 25 by 34?
Yep.
Just to clarify on that point, that room isn't exactly square, so there are some jogs in the wall, but that is the largest dimension.
Thank you.
We'll go on to the flexible furniture configuration. This one was named the flexible furniture configuration, but as we had these subcommittee meetings, we've migrated the horseshoe into having a quasi version of this. This scenario is more complementary to the type of furniture that's currently in 102, the room that we're in, where you'd have these tables that you could butt together. There could still be an end wall if the subcommittee sees that that's something that's desirable with the gate. We've included that in these studies just so you can see, you know, the need for the swing and the accessibility of that for planning purposes that could come or go as we move forward. Something to note in the difference between the horseshoe and then the flexible configuration is the number of legislators differential as well as public seats. We're working with whole numbers now and sets of twos as those lay out. And the secretary is sitting at the table in a similar scenario to what we have in 102 right now, where the secretary is at the corner to have clear sight lines to staff and chair. Other than that, there's a similarity between these. We'll take into account the comments from the last slide in the media and get that updated in this scenario as well. Is there any comments, questions?
Seeing none in the room, Madam Chair.
Thank you. My only comment, and this would probably pertain to the previous slide as well, I don't see a Class 1 committee as having only 10 legislators, or 11 for that matter, but I could be wrong. I'm not sure about that, and that would be my comment on the on those particular renderings. And I think on while I prefer, I think the curve is more aesthetically pleasing, and I like the way it serves the committee. I also do like in, say, this middle rendering, the number of public seats that are included in that, along with the number of legislative seats. Senator Flowers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in looking at the two options on the arc or the square or the rectangle, I think at maximum kind of legislative seating in the arc version, I think moving that deeply into the arc is just, I think that would be really kind of a strange setup with the public having two full rows kind of within the arc of the legislators. I don't know. To me, that's just a kind of a non-starter on that that approach. And so based on that, I think I like the, even though I like the aesthetic of the arc and some of the qualities of the arc, but given the space limitations, I think I move to the more rectangular approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And I agree with your comments, and also would point out that not only do we, is it awkward to have the public into the arc, but the podium in particular is an issue on a couple of the configurations. Other comments? Okay, I'm not seeing any, so let's proceed.
Okay. Madam Chair and the subcommittee, we're going to transition into an adjacency assessment. I think this was one we were feeling we wished we'd had in the last round as we zoomed into 3A and 3C and the differentials between them to get all of our minds and the point of reference of where these sit within the first floor is important, and what's above, below, and across the hall from each of these hearing room configurations. So we studied that in this last round. 3A. Below, we'll start in the basement, has a mechanical room. Above, in the second floor, is the Governor's Office of Budget and Program Planning. And why we're noting that is there will be a point in time during construction, if the column is removed from the center of that pod location, that there will be some disruption to the staff that are located in that pod area, which would be in the Governor's Office of Budget and Program Planning. Restrooms and a hearing room are above that, so as we go up in the building, there's very little impact to staff or folks that are going to be long-term in the building throughout the year. You guys will see in a moment our update to the construction schedule, and when we're planning to do this is the construction being between the legislative sessions, so we're really just spying and thinking about who would be in the Capitol during or between the legislative sessions that we might be interrupting their workflow. In 3C, we'll start in the basement. That's the one that's located in the right-hand corner here. The basement is a house space. It has a conference room and a few offices. The second floor is a governor's conference room, break room, and three offices located in that area. So though it is impactful to the governor's wing, it's not as impactful as looking at that 2A hearing room, if you recall, that would really have significantly impacted the governor's wing. And Randy, I don't know if you want to speak further about DOA's perspective at this time, and I'm putting him on the spot.
Yeah, that's okay, Elizabeth. Madam Chair, committee members, I think from our perspective, we would have both areas, if structure is going to be removed, would have some impact on the occupants on the second floor. I think we would have a little more hesitancy of 3C rather than 3A, but it's not a deal breaker like we've talked about before with the East Wing. Thank you.
Another point of reference, we were discussing the differences between 3A and 3C in the last realm. There are set of double doors at the end of the public corridor. On the west wing side, those are just beyond the right of the hearing room door entry point, and there is a discussion if the subcommittee chooses. We've looked at and assessed the potential of moving that set of double doors further back so that you could extend this public corridor in so that there could be a threshold between the public and legislative staff. 3C has that kind of grandfathered in as a condition that's already available. We could punch an opening into the 3C hearing room entry point in here for public and egress staff out to come and go on that legislator access side. In either scenario, there are some additional pros cons as far as adjacency of having access for legislators to go down to the House legislator majority bullpen, which is below the east wing, or if you look at the west wing side, that's the House legislator minority bullpen. So you can see that 3A is closer to minority, 3C is closer to majority. Some other points of clarification and things to note. There are two public elevators that are located off the rotunda as well as the grand stairs. There was some comment and note about public using the elevator that's down this wing. That's something that, you know, would probably not be key carded if we were to remove these doors, so public could still go in there, but maybe it's a deterrent that keeps public from going as far into that area, if that makes sense, so that the legislators could have a kind of breakout space or an area to kind of come and go that's not directly interfacing with the public. I hope I've stated that correctly and that makes sense. I'm looking to Joe to see if he wants to clarify how that was worded.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's so many details that we'll work out later. I think the most significant aspect of this discussion is showing that we can make the 3A option the attribute that 3C has, which is separation of public versus legislator access doors. We can do the same thing on the 3A option by moving that wall. And I think that's kind of what our main point is trying to be at this point in time. There's other details to be designed later on, but again, this is the big point that we're discussing right now, Madam Chair.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Joe. One thing I did want to point out, and I know we're talking about adjacency, but this diagram brings up a point that I think was stated earlier. So 3C has windows on two walls, where 3A has the windows on one wall. And while everyone, I'm sure, agrees that having windows is a great thing, not so much for committee hearings. I honestly think that we have the blinds closed a majority of the time. In addition, windows do tend to impact the furniture use in the room. So I'm just kind of making that point now while I'm thinking of it.
Madam Chair, and one additional aspect of 3A is that it is directly accessible to the elevator adjacent to that, which would then have movement up to the fourth floor and the third floor as far as the House gallery, Senate Sergeant or House Sergeant at Arms, and also House Chambers. So that those are some positive aspects of that particular location related to the access up to the House wing of the building, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. Anybody have any comments about either 3A or 3C and the adjacency assessment? Okay, I do like with 3A, the doors that would guide the public in before hitting those doors, and then would create some separation for legislators who then probably many times would need to hurriedly get on the elevator and upstairs or downstairs to the bullpens. So thank you for that.
Okay. I think this will be a good slide. If we need to, we can come back to, but to just have fresh in everyone's minds as we move forward into our assessment and study in looking at the minutiae between these 3A and 3C, the points that have been brought up are really important to keep in mind. Under workspace allocation, we've been working with the G3 directors to give them the equal kind of contiguous space, looking at our FTE that was determined in the D1D midterm plan. This is a slide that we had in our last round from 3A, looking at the hearing room location being in this pod. This allows LFD to occupy the west wing and LSD to occupy the east wing and two pods, LAD to have contiguous space in a pod area, and then to have the chair comparable to that other chair room located off the rotunda here. In this scenario, we've also included our behind-the-scenes math and calculations of this was our target percentage per each of the divisions to get to 100% for that FTE allocation. And then you can see the differential here. We're trying to be within 1% to 2% of that was something the internal committee with Joe and Randy, we determined was as close as we could get. There's things we have to take into account, which is existing conditions, windows, walls, all, you know, contiguous space that determined how we got into that percentage differential. That gives the assignable divisions 1,566 square feet, 15,266 square feet, and that we took and compared to 3C, taking that same square footage. But first initial pass in option one we have here is leaving LFD in the west wing, LSD in the east wing, and you can see in this scenario that it's created non-contiguous space for LSD that forces them to go down the hallway further for their staff space. So what we additionally did was took that same hearing room location for 3C and looked at what if we flipped LSD and LFD, and I'd like to invite any of the directors to comment on any of these slides if you have any thoughts.
Any thoughts from the directors? Preferences, comments?
This is Jerry. I'll just weigh in. On the hearing room pod 3C issue with the separation of the staff, that would be less than ideal for us. We'd certainly prefer to be consolidated. Our division has been separate for a long time. We've desired the opportunity to be more centrally located one with another. I think it would help with our productivity, and so we have a preference for that. I would also note that it reminds me that the number of windows for one of the pods, we wanted that for staff, and it was noted by the chair that the other 3C has extended windows, and that's not necessarily conducive to a committee meeting. So that's just, I think, another reason that maybe 3A is the preference for the committee meeting. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Can we flip back to the 3A workspace allocation, please?
Yep. So this is 3A with LFD on the west wing, LSD on the east wing, the hearing room in this lower pod. That, and what we have as backgrounds, a point of clarification just for everyone, is the backgrounds that are underneath these colored blocks are existing conditions, so only existing walls. And there's still work to do to space plan and work with each of the divisions to make it work for each of their programming needs. But for example, LAD's pod here, you can see there's four offices. They're in need of four offices and a workstation and to have some privacy. This provides them that in 3A, in 3C, in the option two. If we were to try to get contiguous space for LSD, LAD sits within a pod that's slightly smaller, and so in order to try to get them as close to their target percentage, which we're really close here, they would have first right of refusal over an additional office potentially in this scenario.
And Madam Chair, while Amy's Director Carlson is thinking of her thoughts, if she wants to offer them, I did have a chance to communicate with the legislative auditor, Angus McKeever. And he is basically neutral on 3A or 3C option one. He and I both noted that 3A option two splits the legislative audit division into two spaces, which is in direct conflict with the wording of House Bill 856 that requires eight contiguous offices. So there would have to be a change in the last session law if that were to take place or be put into place. But I think in general, it looks like 3A or 3C option one complies with House Bill 856 more directly, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. I just have a quick question, and there may be other directors that have questions as well. But what I'm not really understanding why, if in the 3A configuration, why the target for, say, LSD, why would it be different if they're not impacted, if LSD is not impacted by a hearing room such as 3A? I'm not understanding that.
Joe and I are both looking at each other.
Madam Chair, do you mean like the square foot or percentages?
Maybe I didn't state it very well, but I'm looking at, so LSD in this configuration goes from 54.14% to 52.6, and I don't understand why there's a change.
Oh, Madam Chair, the left-hand column is the target. So in other words, as as first floor plan D1D, it basically states that the number of FTE on the first floor assigned each division, it actually put the number of individuals in there, and then mathematically, as soon as the hearing room and additional chair/conference room are set aside, the balance of the space then was to be allocated based upon the target percentages. And what option 3A of the right-hand column kind of shows in this configuration, this is how close it gets to that. So that's right. Basically what's shown here. And then I think what causes that to be a little bit below 54%. Again, we try to get to 1%, and that just every single option we came up with splintered one office on the other end for one division or another. So the directors, the G3, decided let's try not to do that because that is a negative consequence of getting so tight, so they were okay, all three of them, with getting a little bit more, give more latitude in going up to 2% variation, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, I was misunderstanding. The first column is not actual, it's target. So now I understand. So anyone that has questions or comments, please go ahead.
Seeing none in the room, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see any online, so let's proceed.
Madam Chair and the subcommittee, we'll go on to building systems analysis update, and Crystal's going to touch on some additional information we've added.
All right, thank you, Elizabeth. So the slides we're going to walk through are nearly the same as the previous work session where we walked through these slides. In 3A, the only note that we really want folks to be aware of as we looked further into the option of putting a hearing room in that southwest pod is that it will impact the occupancy of the spaces above and below that, which below that is mechanical space, and above that, I believe, is a governor's staff. So keeping that in mind, because there is a mechanical space below this, there is the impact to the air handling unit below there. That air handling unit is serves that pod as well as some adjacent offices immediately surrounding that pod. However, we don't feel like that is a reason to either pro or con this pod. It's just something that we would work through with construction and scheduling and things such as that. So it doesn't have a major impact to this pod, but it does mean that that air handling unit would be not in use for a period of time, and it's likely the spaces it would affect would also be vacant because of the structural upgrades in that space. So just wanted to make note of that. And so you can see the orange note below that says occupancy limited in spaces adjacent while structural mechanical work is being completed. Are there any questions about the impacts construction-wise for this pod?
I'm going to additionally just highlight what Crystal said to give a little bit more importance to the anytime we're removing a column, it's going to require some folks to be out of that space above or below in the building for safety concerns, and that the mechanical unit, which does serve C, D, and E, on these floors, we've noted what they serve. It's kind of a lot to digest in a tiny little space. Note that there is going to be noise and then some occupancy folks that would normally be in that space that would need to be removed from that space anyways due to structural, and that there are ways during construction to mitigate. This is for an air handler unit, so it's providing fresh air to those spaces that we could mitigate with some additional equipment being brought in from the contractor or some fresh air from a window. And Senator Flowers, you have a question?
I do. Thank you. And thank you, Madam Chair. How long would the disruption be approximately?
Madam Chair, I can answer that question. I'm just going to jump over to the schedule here real quick. Can I see the? Let me get to that slide. I'm having technical difficulties. Sorry about that. So that disruption is looking like we're looking at about 110 days at this point in time in the current schedule. Those are working days, so that duration would be from about 5/12 of 2025 until October 10th of the same year, 2025.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'd just like to add that 110 days, I believe, is a fair assessment. The other clarification I think we should make with this air handler is that in areas C, D, and E on that diagram in the top right, that doesn't mean that all the occupants need to be out for that duration. The occupants directly above the work being done would have to be removed. So not to be confused with, you know, 3/4 of the building being vacated, just the room above. Thank you.
It is our assumption that that structural and mechanical work would be happening concurrently, so if people are out for structural reasons, the air handler being non-functional won't affect them.
And Madam Chair, my understanding is that the structural work is what's driving that amount of time, so four to six months worth of vacating the space right above the pod and below the pod, and that the mechanical work is significantly shorter in duration, maybe a month or two at the maximum, and therefore, since they're concurrent, the mechanical work is not really the driver and shouldn't differentiate this from the option 3C, because 3C requires the same structural modifications, therefore the same 4 to 6 month vacation of the space below and above, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. Are there other questions or comments?
None in the room, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
Okay. Thank you. So if we look at 3C, similarly, the spaces immediately above and below the pod in the northeast corner would be vacated for a period while the structural work is completed. That is the removal of the column within that new hearing room, as well as the space immediately above and below it, just to make sure for safety reasons those spaces aren't occupied. Like Joe clarified, this option does not have an air handler below it, so that is a non-issue on this portion of the building. However, there still would be the same structural upgrades, and that duration of time would be the same as it would be in 3A, in which spaces would be vacant and structural work would be occurring. Any questions about 3C?
Seeing none in the room, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Please go ahead and continue.
Okay. We're going to have Scott speak in more detail to what he just quickly went over, but the visual graphic to support the pod schedule and what we anticipate the construction duration looking like.
Thanks, Elizabeth. And Madam Chair, just a quick overview of the project schedule here. We see a little bit more detail since the last time this was reviewed. Some of the key, obviously there's the 20 months that we have between sessions, which is really our window for construction on this project. And the idea is that we want to get into the structural and mechanical work in the pods as soon as possible, understanding how this affects the executive branch and the spaces above in particular. So you can see a package one here, which would, package one and package two, which are kind of outlined here, can also be thought of as phase one and phase two. So we would start that package one that is outlining the structural and mechanical work in the project a little bit early than kind of our final construction document deliverable, and get the bidding and permitting process started a little bit early, so that when the 2025 legislative session gets out around May 9th of 2025, we're ready to hit the ground running and get that construction started immediately. So again, we've got about 110-day duration there from May 12th until October 10th for that particular part of the work. That's when those pods, really it would be ideal to have the pods vacated during that time, as we kind of discussed already. And then there's phase two also, which has a considerable amount of overlap between the two. But really the difference between phase one and phase two is a characterization of what that work is. So phase one is structural and mechanical. So that's more of the heavy demolition and noise that's going to happen within the building. And then phase two is more of interior office improvement. So that's where we would pick up the balance of the spaces in the building and kind of complete the rest of the construction through late August of 2026. And that can be broken down into that phase kind of has two different areas within that phase. There's the east wing and the west wing. Both. So we have kind of those separated out depending on how we work the logistics out in the building of how people are moving around, those durations could change. But that's kind of the worst case scenario right now for what those durations would be.
And Madam Chair, and members of the subcommittee and directors, right now this is just a draft schedule, and as far as coordinating with the directors on moving people around right after session, we haven't had that conversation yet, and therefore the understanding needs to be that we will have that in any way that we can accelerate the construction by starting up as soon as possible after session, with impacting the spaces to be modified would be advantageous to the overall schedule. But I did want to make sure the subcommittee understood the directors haven't been consulted fully, and the staff in those spaces haven't been consulted fully about how we can make that happen. Conceivably, that would be finding space that could be somewhat permanent until renovations are done for staff to use within the building on floors that are available during the interim, and having that as consolidated as possible and as functional as possible. But Madam Chair, I wanted to point out that we haven't worked out the details on that, and that we would be committed to doing that with the directors to make sure it worked as best as possible under the scheduling constraints of the project.
And just to follow up.
Thank you, Joe. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Madam Speaker. One additional comment, if you please. There's kind of two directions we could go with this schedule, and I just wanted to point out as a follow-up to Joe's comment that the two priorities, we can prioritize less movement in the building among all of the occupants within the building, or we can prioritize a more linear construction path. And I think the way we're seeing everything go and the priorities that we're kind of looking at is more geared towards less, you know, if we can only move people once, that's the priority is what we're looking at. And so I just wanted to make sure and point that out. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate the schedule. And I think Marilyn and Carolyn are still in the room, and I'm commenting that I think I saw an earlier schedule that construction was starting in April, and that gave me a lot of anxiety. So Marilyn, being the author of the Real Deal calendar, I'm looking for confirmation that legislature will most likely be done by the 9th of May.
Well, one can only hope.
Exactly.
I'd also add that Legislative Council is meeting and looking at the session calendar this week, and they'll approve something to begin with.
Great. Thank you both.
Madam
Any
Chair.
Other comments or questions in the room?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Randy Stevens, I think the goal of nailing down a hearing room location today is first and foremost, and I think we'll just need to dig a little bit deeper into the details of the schedule about how that plays out. I mean, we're trying to be as detailed as possible, and yet the need to keep it high level to allow flexibility for some of the realities we might run into, just the way of procurement and surprises and things like that. So I think it is a good step forward for the schedule that's being shown. Just know that I think even if you talk to Ledge Council, I don't think we're also approving the schedule as we've got it shown. It is just a roadmap to get us to that end goal and to show that it's possible. But I think the timelines and the bars may need to shift as we find out more information as we go along. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, this is Marilyn. If I see this, LSD moves out of the pods, is it on May 12th? And by May 12th, our work will probably be in the two chambers and in our offices, which will be away from that. And by then, most of the staff is gone. It's just our offices, some part-time staff members. So this doesn't look like it would be too difficult for us.
Thank you, Marilyn. Appreciate your perspective on that. Okay, if there aren't any other comments, let's proceed.
Chris, did you want to add something? Okay. In summary, this is our grand moment update of what we've been building the sequencing of slides to, is to have a great discussion about the subtle differences between 3A and 3C. And if the subcommittee feels that they can arrive at a conclusion today, this is the platform to do that. If they think that they determine we need to do some additional work, we're happy to do that, and we'll discuss what those next steps look like. Key considerations, Crystal was going to go over.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So as we begin going through this slide, in the upper right-hand corner, you can see what we are referring to as a stoplight. So green being like that this option is viable, yellow being like, yes, this could be a potential option, but we have some things we still need to work through, and red being an option with viability concerns, as in, you know, maybe red stop on that one. So what we're looking to do is kind of get buy-off from, or at least consensus from the G3 directors, which we have shown here, and as well as DOA and the State Historic Preservation Office. So that is things we are currently working through. As we work through those, some other key considerations on both studies is we went through some pretty extensive cost estimating, and in the end, the two studies came out to be within 1% of each other. So whether it's 3A or 3C, the cost implications of both are almost the same. They're nearly identical, so they're within 1% of the total project cost of each other. So we didn't have cost as a key consideration to move in a direction for either option. Similarly, schedule is essentially the same for both options. There are some nuances, but it wasn't anything that rose to the top that would be advantageous for one option or the other. Both options keep the project in schedule and on budget. So that is good to know moving forward. If we look specifically at 3A, that is the pod in the southwest corner. Things to consider, we're moving an air handler. It may desire relocation of that pair of doors, which are just a passage set right now. It's a set of doors with side lights to provide additional noise and privacy for the public side of the corridor versus the legislator side of that corridor. Staff offices have greater access to daylight if we proceed with option 3A, because pod 3C has additional windows. 3A is closer to the minority bullpen, and it allows that existing shared secretary coffee making area to remain in its current function, but it will also require temporary relocation of the governor's office of budget and programming planning staff, which is immediately above on the second floor of that pod. If we look at 3C, key considerations are it's adjacent an existing stair. It has that existing door pair that would allow for that noise and privacy separation there for legislators and staff as well as the public. It requires renovation of the basement space below, so that is currently a staff space, and should we proceed with 3C, that space would need to be renovated because we will be upgrading the foundation right there, and then putting that office space back into an occupiable condition would be needed. It is adjacent the majority bullpen there in the basement, and it would require temporary relocation of the governor's office. That space above on the second floor is a coffee, conference, and then three private offices. So those are the things that we talked through as differences between 3A and 3C, and welcome any comments anyone has on the overall view of this floor.
Any comments from anyone on the committee or any guests?
Madam Chair, I think I'll weigh in.
Senator Flowers.
Thank you. I guess the bottom line for me is I think 3A has more appeal for me. It avoids disrupting the governor's office itself, which I think is desirable. Obviously, it still affects the office of the budget office, but I prefer that. I think that's more reasonable. I think it keeps the legislative services staff together, which I think is important. And if I was in Jerry's shoes, I'd want to ideally keep them generally in the same area. And I think the fact that the staff offices would have more windows in by not turning the 3C location into a hearing room and using that as offices is also desirable. So I think based on all that, I lean towards 3A. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Other comments?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
At the last meeting, I was kind of leaning towards 3C, but after having conversations and all of the conversations we had today and the benefits of 3A, I'm also leaning towards 3A, and I think that's the way we should move forward.
Thank you, Representative. And I can't see if Senator Bogner is wanting to speak, but I'm going to call on him anyway.
Okay. Madam Chair, I agree with the previous statements. I'll support 3A.
Thank you, Senator. I have one question and then a comment. I think regarding 3A, Elizabeth or someone else may have made a comment about we could possibly implement a key card for the use of that elevator if needed. Is that relatively easy to do, or is it a major thing?
I think what it comes down to is double checking egress and fire and life safety, that we wouldn't limit anyone in the case of an emergency from being able to go through those doors. But you could have it key carded, and what we could look at is, could it be key carded, and then in an emergency when alarm's going off, that those doors unlock and allow folks to go through.
Great. And I mentioned that not necessarily that we should include that in the plan, but after construction and after use in the future, that may be something that arises. So it'd be good to know if it would be a possibility or not. And then I'll just conclude by saying that I agree with the rest of the committee members that 3A is optimal, in my opinion, especially for the reasons that Senator Flowers spoke about. So, I think we have a consensus. And Joe, I'm going to ask you if we need to take action at all. I plan on reporting to Ledge Council. And not sure if we need to have some type of motion or vote on that.
Madam Chair, I do believe that would be helpful to the design team to have certainty moving forward as to make a motion on which one to move forward to the final presentation, what they will be doing between now and the 23rd is refining this to be basically a final report from this subcommittee to the Legislative Council proposing the adoption of option 3A with all of the changes that you want to make at this time, such as moving the double door, etc. So I think an affirmative action and then also an affirmative, I guess that 3C is the one you are not moving forward would be helpful, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. So
Okay.
I'm sorry, Senator Flowers.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just concerned that I was moving too quickly and wanted to make sure that I gave any of the directors an opportunity to weigh in.
Madam Chair, they seem to be sitting back in their chairs, and I think, as you can see on this particular plan sheet that we just most recently looked at, that this was 3A was the preferred option of the G3 directors. I think, again, audit was neutral between the two options, but both the services and fiscal division directors were for this. And I also believe, even though it's not colored in, from what I heard from Randy as representing feedback from the director of administration's office and the executive branch, that they preferred option 3A as well, due to its less disruption on the second floor areas, Madam Chair. And Randy's going to hopefully reiterate that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Joe, we would put a green dot on the green light on the option 3A and a yellow light on 3C, if that helps.
It didn't help. Can you restate that?
Yeah, sorry, we'll try again. So we would put a green light. So we'd support 3A more than we would 3C. So
okay.
Green light 3A, yellow light 3C. Thank you.
Great. Okay, now it's clear. Thank you. Senator Flowers.
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate, I was just going to make a motion that we move forward with option 3A and direct the design team to take the next steps.
Great. I have a motion from Senator Flowers. Is there a second?
Madam Chair, would that motion then include the moving of the double door as part of option 3A, Madam Chair, Senator Flowers?
Madam Chair, that was my understanding of what we were endorsing here.
Thank you, Senator Flowers. That was my understanding as well. Is there a second?
A second. Senator Bogner seconds.
Thank you, Senator Bogner. Last chance for any public or comment on this issue or committee comment. Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you.
So next steps for our team. As a reminder, our engagement structure, all the folks we've been working with internally, we would like to continue to work with the three directors to go forward with 3A and make sure that we understand their scope of work for each wing so that they can comfortably occupy those wings. That will impact our construction schedule and our cost of construction estimation we've been doing so that we can continue to refine that to the end of this phase. Other things that we have noted, we tentatively had put an additional work session 4 in here for 10:23. I'd like to discuss as a team if we think that's necessary and what we'd like to do at that meeting if we'd like to still have that.
And Madam Chair, there's two purposes potentially of that particular date. One would be to see the final plan that is developed that just shows the one option, and then everything else will be in the why the other options weren't chosen, kind of a similar format to what you've seen here today, but it would then refine it down to one final recommendation. And then also the second thing is that Todd is going to be presenting a bill draft that was handed down to us from the council itself, and then on the 23rd that would be the date it which time you could basically endorse that. Again, that is an option for the committee to choose. If you would like, we could just move forward and finalize based upon the comments today as far as the mid-range plan. But then again, that is up to the committee itself, Madam Chair.
Thoughts from committee members? Not hearing any, and I'm inclined to agree with you, Joe, that I think a short meeting on the 23rd, even just via Zoom, would be appropriate to tie up any loose ends. Is that acceptable to the rest of the committee members?
I agree.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Harvey.
Agreed.
Thank you. Great.
Okay, we'll work with Joe on getting that scheduled. We're under the understanding that 10/23 works for everyone still.
And Madam Chair, if it would be okay with you, if we could start a little bit later, maybe 10 a.m., if that would work out for the committee members. It should be a relatively short meeting, I would think, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I think that works for me.
Okay, I think everyone's nodded. Is that
okay?
Yes.
Thumbs up. Senator Bogner?
Yeah, and I guess I do have something to add before we move on. I don't know where we're at, but I have a question for the chair. I guess, are we just doing the pods? Do we have any ability or desire from you or the committee to address maybe updating the configurations of hearing room 152, 137, 102, and 172? Is that something we can do in this mid-range planning? I know we seemed like there'd been consensus from the subcommittee on doing, you know, a horseshoe configuration. Is that something we could do in the existing hearing rooms, or are you just wanting to focus on the pods at this time?
I'm going to turn to Joe for any information or explanation on that.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Bogner, that definitely would be within the authorization of House Bill 856 for this modification of legislative space, so we could definitely do that. As far as between now and I guess I would ask if we could have this be something that the design team can move forward on in conjunction with whoever the council wants. But as far as having anything really pinned down design-wise, maybe more of a motion that asks us to do that and continue that process would be sufficient. I'm just not sure we could have actually, you know, specific details and the design sort of level documents. But we can definitely move forward in that direction if the subcommittee would like that. And ideally, if we could make these four hearing rooms better, it's definitely something we would move forward with. My understanding is that OLIS is considering already taken into consideration some of what has been mentioned at the previous meetings of this committee, which is to try to clean up the AV aspects, such as a big, huge black box that's in this room, and have it be more consolidated in a server room in the basement with basically wiring and better technical capabilities of the hearing room. So it definitely would be in line with what the mission of the appropriations in House Bill 856 is set out to put in place, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. And committee members, what do you think? Should we make a motion to pursue some more information?
Madam Chair, I'd personally like to move forward. I think it seemed in the previous meetings that we were all on the same page in terms of updating our large hearing rooms and in the configuration of horseshoe. I don't know if we needed to decide on horseshoe right at this moment, but it seemed like we all were in agreement at the time.
Okay. Rep. Harvey?
I agree. I'd like to take the steps and see what it would take to update the other committee rooms as well. I think the more we can get a little more uniformity between them and efficiencies, the better off we're going to be.
Thank you. Was that a motion, Rep. Harvey?
Yeah, I can make the motion. Madam Chair, I motion that we move forward and take the steps to research and find out what it's going to take to update the additional committee.
And a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion in the room? No. Nope. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
And no opposition, so that motion carries. Joe, does that give you direction that you needed?
Madam Chair, I think so. What we'll do is we'll reach out between now and the council. We want to make sure and hit this target here. It looks like we've got a good pathway, and thank you for making the decision. The subcommittee's left us with narrowed down to one option, so that makes our pathway clear. I'll get with the design team and Randy Stevens with A&E division, and we'll figure out a plan on what we can provide, and we'll provide as much as we can between now and the legislative council meeting, and we'll have further discussions on the 23rd with the subcommittee on what sorts of motions that they would want to have considered at the legislative council level that would allow us to continue in the way you want us to continue. Again, realizing we won't have really design developed at that stage, but we can at least set some things into motion on characteristics and attributes and capacity and various things such as that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. So before we move on to other committee business, I just want to make sure first that our presenters are complete. I didn't want to cut them short. And also, if there's any comments from anyone in the room or online.
It's perfect timing, Madam Chair. Last slide.
May I just have one thing, Madam Chair? I just wanted to add for the record that the West Elevator, regarding the key card conversation, is the only freight elevator in the Capitol. I just wanted to make that note of that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Something else I'll add to that, Carolyn, is the age of those hoistways and the controls in those elevators would need to be evaluated, because those are the original elevators from probably the 70s. So we just need to make sure the controls are updated to accommodate any technology like that.
Okay, thank you.
So what we'll add in here, in addition to the 4 points that we have noted, is to work with Joe and Randy on starting to develop some content and pulling in the other hearing rooms into our scope of work. I think a lot of the culmination of this phase is defining what our scope of work is so that we can move into schematic design, documentation phases in the future, and to really have a clear understanding of the entirety of what is desired. Right now, just for an example, and we're doing a cost assessment, we're keeping those numbers in the wings very squishy at the moment, and a cost per square foot of what the extreme scenario could be, because we needed to work further with the directors. So I think we could apply the same strategy, and then as we move forward and understand what the desire is to update the other hearing rooms, we'll be able to tighten in that number as well.
Okay, thank you.
So I think unless there's anything else, we have concluded our presentation.
Thanks very much.
Madam Chair, on the agendas remaining are public comment and then other committee business, which is Todd Everett's presenting a bill draft. So that's the last two things we have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think I've asked a number of times for public comment, and I think we're good there. So, Mr. Everts, if you're ready to move on regarding HB 856, you're up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the subcommittee, Todd Everts, Chief Legal Counsel. Members of the subcommittee, 856 requires that legislative council, in consultation with the audit committee and the finance committee, is directed to pre-introduce a joint resolution recommending the legislature's consent and approval of the long-range legislative branch capital development plan. You have, hopefully, before you PD 30. It's a draft of this joint resolution. And I think Joe emailed out a copy to those of you who are online. And just a couple of takeaways regarding this joint resolution. First of all, Legislative Council has already approved this long-range plan. And obviously, we'll be submitting this plan to the legislature concurrently with this joint resolution. I think some of the important points about this joint resolution is the whereas clause on lines 18 and 19. Whereas the purpose of the long-range plan is to offer non-binding options and recommendations for the legislature to provide space needed for the legislative process to work effectively. The other important whereas can be found on lines 23 through 27. Whereas the findings in the long-range plan concluded that additional space is needed and identified the following space needs in order of priority: hearing rooms to accommodate debate and public involvement in the legislative process, workspace for elected officials to facilitate legislation and improve public access, workspace for professional support staff, and workspace for temporary staff needed during the legislative session. And your decision to pursue update of the hearing rooms, your last discussion, reflects that's the first priority in this long-range plan, members of the subcommittee, that's being offered up to the legislature in terms of priority space needs. And perhaps most importantly is the whereas clause on the second page on lines 2 through 4. It reiterates that the long-range plan acknowledged that additional space is needed beyond what's currently allocated to the legislature. But it also specifically states that additional study and legislative input will be needed to determine the most appropriate implementation plan going forward. So again, it emphasizes that the plan itself provides different options and recommendations on how to achieve your future needs in terms of legislative space and allocation, but it's up to the future legislature or legislatures to implement whatever option that they choose to implement and fund that option, going forward. Madam Chair, that's all I have about this. My request is that the subcommittee take a look at this, and if you want any changes to the language, additions or subtractions, to get those to me before your next meeting, and I will put those into the draft and then have you review this at your next meeting and then make a recommendation to the Legislative Council to adopt this joint resolution, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Everts. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Everts? Seeing none at this time, we'll certainly review that and get any questions or comments to you prior to our next meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And also, Joe, if you can ensure that that discussion is put on our agenda for that meeting.
Madam Chair, will do. And anyone, please feel free to contact Todd directly or me and Todd jointly. And if there's anything that is moving forward as far as changes, we'll make sure that all members of the subcommittee are aware of that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, I am referring to my agenda and don't see anything else unless I'm forgetting something.
Madam Chair, maybe one last call for public comments after Todd's presentation. I see no one in the room and no one online, but just to make sure it's official, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. If there's any comment either in the room or online, please indicate. And seeing and hearing none, I believe that our business for today is concluded. Thank you all. Thank you, design team, for your great work. And thank you, committee members and attendees, for your input.
Thank you.
We are adjourned. Thank you.